In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound, this amazing stranger from the planet Krypton, the Man of Steel, Superman! Empowered with X-ray vision, possessing remarkable physical strength, Superman fights a never-ending battle for truth and justice, disguised as a mild-mannered newspaper reporter, Clark Kent.
Hello, welcome back to another installment of the Max Fleischer Superman series here at Apocalypse Video. I'm your host and I guess manager of, although my co-workers may debate that, of Apocalypse Video, David Snyder. I'm joined again by ruler of the wasteland, Morton Hoof.
Hails.
Hails, indeed. And we're talking about the second installment in the Fleischer Superman cartoons, The Mechanical Monsters, a.k.a. Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. Because I you'd have to be a blind and or deaf person to not realize that Sky Captain took a lot of inspiration from this episode or this short of the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons. It's written all it's all over it.
You know what else I saw that this episode probably influenced was one of the Ghibli films is Castle in the Sky.
And oh yeah, really?
The robot in that movie, it flies the same way where like it
like has wings kind of come out of its arms.
Yeah, kind of. Some kind of like mechanical feathers come out of its arms, and that's primarily how it flies is using those arms. And just the way that the mechanical monsters flew in this one and kind of their wing structure on their arms reminded me of that too. I'm like, oh, I wonder if that kind of influenced that design.
One thing that kind of surprised me, maybe this was present a lot in comics and whatnot, but the whole design of the mechanical monsters in this short, really cool.
Yeah.
Like almost like beyond its time, 1941, you know what I mean? Like the way that the arms went out and the wings like, and they rotated and shit. Like that seemed like ahead of its time to me.
Well, I think what stands out is that it almost seems like way more effort was put into designing these robots than you would think.
Yeah, exactly. Like they could have just been very standard cookie cutter robots, but this feels like they went the extra mile and really designed them to look cool and functional.
You know, what does bother me about those monsters though is that when they're in the base, they're all like out of order. They're just standing in arbitrary order. I'm like, what the heck?
Well,
I think that the villain needs to be a little bit more ADD.
Speaking of which, like we didn't do this in the last episode, but for those who are unaware, who are unable to obtain a copy of the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons, the Mechanical Monsters, the story here, and what I love about these cartoons, very simple to break down the story. There's a guy who, for some reason, was wearing a tuxedo. I don't know why. He's wearing a tuxedo in this episode. He has a bunch of mechanical robots that he uses to rob banks. And that's your story. Basically, they're stealing jewels. Superman comes and saves the day. I just want to, basically, every episode, just to get ahead of this, every episode in this series, Lois gets into some shit, Superman rescues her, and that's the short.
Not all of them.
Oh, yeah, not all of them. That's true. There are some that end in kind of weird, unique ways. You could argue some of these are barely stories, but anyway, we'll get to those. But that's the gist of this episode. There's a guy with a bunch of robots stealing shit, and Superman's gonna stop him. That's it.
So this one, the big heist is that the robots are, or robot steals a bunch of jewelry. I think $50 million worth of jewelry.
Is that what it was?
The largest amount of jewelry ever assembled.
It's always the largest amount.
Yeah, the largest amount of money ever assembled is
ever in, that existed
in one spot, and it's also in the news to make sure that every supervillain can see.
Exactly.
So this one, the
god rotation is such.
But what's so crazy is that the robot puts all its jewels in his chest. Lois hops in there.
No, is it his chest or his back?
I think it opens both ways.
Yeah, yeah.
So Lois hops in there too, so she can get the real story. Anyways, when the robot's flying away and Superman's chasing him, the robot has a sensor that tells the bot or the scientist that interference, or whatever. So the guy he clicks a button to let the robot release the jewels, and then do a maneuver to get Superman off the robot's back. And then when the robot gets there, the scientist is like, "What happened to the jewels?" Well, what do you think happened? You pressed the button. You pressed the button. Don't you know what your bone button does?
Tell me what those jewels are.
They're in the sea where your robot dropped them, where you told them that.
Maybe he didn't know what that button would do. So I don't know.
He built that whole thing. So that's really funny.
We didn't really touch on this in the last episode, but one of the tropes of this era, there are a lot of levers. Like, they're levers and buttons, and they're very oversized. Like, you get a lot of that in this series, and you get it in this episode, and I like that. But yeah, it is interesting that he built, like, all these robots, but he doesn't seem to know how they work. Well, specifically, and there was a lot of them. If I remember the numbers, like, it went up to, like, 27 or something like that.
I think
so.
I think I remember 21, so...
21.
There must be at least 30, maybe 30 or so. And Superman fights them all, which is kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, and it seems like... Maybe it's just because there's a lot of them, but like they pose not a threat, but like it's an obstacle that Superman has to overcome. Like he can't just like he. It's not like he really just breezes through them. Like they pound him down, and he gets pounded to the ground a bit, and he has to fight them all off. And basically, what I'm saying is, it takes a little time for Superman to get through all 20 some odd robots.
Just take some time. And then in this one, compared to the first one, Superman reverts to really big leaps. This one, yeah, he doesn't really fly. It's more he jumps from
building to building until he gets to like the jewelry place or something.
Yeah, he just jumps and then he kind of falls where he needs to go.
Yeah.
But he jumps so high. So that's pretty cool. And then another really cool aspect about this episode specifically is that when the monster flies to the town, the police who are guarding the building, they all have Tommy guns.
Yes.
And there's one scene where the gun is like shooting at the camera.
Like, yes, it's the close-up part.
Yeah.
When the robot's like, dun, dun, like walking towards, you see this the ominous shadow overtake this cop. And he's just like, and he's just like, oh, shit, and he jumps out of the camera. Yeah. I love that shit. Like, again, straight up Sky Captain shit. The shot of them, like all those cops, like pointing the Tommy guns up in the air and going, that's straight out of Sky Captain. And that, again, that shit for me is iconic. Those shots of the cops shooting and really just shooting in this entire series is cool. Like the sound effects are great, and like it's you know, it's odd to say, like, out of all the movies I've seen so many guns shot, but I really feel the guns in this series, in particular this episode, like the Tommy guns. Like, there's something about it that just, like, there's a weight to it. You know what I mean?
It's interesting that you say that, because guns are actually a huge part of this show.
Yeah.
Almost every single episode, guns are like incorporated into it. And that's really interesting to me, because when you think about the history of cartoons, there was certainly a period where guns were kind of off limits, where it was blasters, you know. Yeah. But these are real guns, bullets flying, people get shot in some episodes. So it's really, really interesting to me, their use of guns, and how almost, I think back then probably it wouldn't stand out as much, I think, but us, because of kind of the different attitudes we've seen in cartoons and animations, it does surprise, because it is so early. So it's almost like, oh wow, we wouldn't expect to see guns used like that in these episodes, especially for a time and a show that would presume to be more innocent.
At one point in the series, we see someone swinging a cigarette.
We do see that, too. And another thing, too, about the scene where the robot arrives to steal the jewels. This is another really good example, and certainly one of the first I think I can think of, where the camera takes great effort to establish the size and magnitude of the robot.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the camera angles and the speed at which the robot is walking.
It's really imposing.
Yeah, exactly. And so it really it adds this magnitude to this iron behemoth, basically. That's really awesome. And I think it's certainly one of the things that helps set a precedent for establishing size for big, huge robots.
Well, and again, like we mentioned this in the first episode, I think the music is great. The synchronization, the dun, dun. And that moment when he, my favorite part with the robots is when he goes to rob the jewelry and he steps through that glass window. Like, it's not like he crashes through all at once. His arm breaks through one part of it, and then his shoulder breaks through the other part, and then goosh, 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 breaks through, like, in a sequence like that. It's so cool. They could have easily just, like, had him in one movement crash through a building, but no, his arm breaks through part of the window, and then he continues to smash through the rest of it.
Yeah, it cannot be understated. What Dave just described is what I have sometimes complained about in certain movies, in that it's these moments that are important, but more importantly, they look cool. And it takes its time. It shows you every movement, and it lets you breathe in it. Breathe it in. The whole thing, it takes what, 2 seconds for this robot to crash through it, but instead of doing it in 1 second, they did it in 2 seconds, and that extra second is everything.
It sells it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I cannot understate how many times movies just take shortcuts and don't indulge in moments like that, because I really think that a moment like that is what creates that lasting impression of what we're dealing with here.
It's that it earns the look on that fucking cop's face, like fuck, like Charlie Sheen.
I was scared with him.
Yeah, exactly. Like that was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But what some other things this episode does that I think is kind of cool. It introduces the idea of X-ray vision.
Yes.
Like when it first happens, I thought Superman was shooting his laser beams, but no, it's when he's in pursuit of the robot, and Lois is in the robot after she snuck in like a stowaway, and like his eyes go up and up and up and up, and then the laser and then they change. Like they go from like normal looking eyes to just like eye beams. Like his eyes disappear, and then suddenly it's just all white and like a really like a comically like tall fashion. Then the eye beams start.
Yeah, the way his eyes look are really cartoony. It's funny, but it's worth noting, I think, that this is the only time we see the X-ray vision used in the cartoon.
It's the only time. And we don't get heat vision in the series at all.
We never get the heat vision either.
This is like, in fact, this is the only, I think, aside from flying and super strength, this is like the only overt power that's like superpower that Superman exhibits.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean?
And I think, I think that's interesting because one of the things I remember reading that has always stood out to me is that in the original comics of Superman, the very beginning, there were kind of no rules. So Superman kind of got a new power as he needed it. Mm. And there was one power in particular where he was able to, I forget the technical term, but basically create a tangible image of something. And so one time he was buying a newspaper and he didn't have money. So he just made money and gave it. So he basically stole this newspaper. And so that's kind of what it reminded me of is like in the beginning of this cartoon, they were just kind of adding powers as they needed it. And you wouldn't get it every episode, which is, I think that's a cool thing because it gives the opportunity to have a new power every time.
Well, they stay consistent with Superman. I mean, he flies and he's super strong and bullets don't bounce off him basically. Mm. But that's pretty much it for Superman. Those are his powers. Although there is one, I call it a power basically, or you could call it his super suit that he does. So at the end of the episode, he threatens to like drop her in lava, like a vat of lava. And Superman comes and then, you know, he punches all the robots to death. And then as the Mad Bomber drops, he cuts the rope. He drops Lois into the lava. Superman at the last moment jumps across, saves her. And the lava comes down. The little bowl of lava, the guy tips it and it falls. And before it can engulf Lois Lane, Superman gets over her and covers like an umbrella or something with his cape and diverts the lava.
Yeah.
Like a shield. And it's interesting because that cape isn't Superman. That's just a suit. So that would imply that his suit is like otherworldly.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because I swear this has been a debate or something discussed previously, and that the suit also has some kind of abilities or powers inherent to them, along with Superman. And so, and the cape, I think, I remember reading some things about that, and this ties into that. And I think it's cool because he does use it. And basically what it says is that the lava has fallen on the cape and basically just kind of ran down it, I guess.
Like an umbrella, almost.
Yeah. Basically. And so it was it's a great image.
Oh yeah, it's one, I'm not debating that. It's just it gets into that age old argument with Superman and his costume. Like why does his costume almost never get damaged type thing?
Mm-hmm. And that ties into another one. But but before that, when the scientist or whatever this guy is,
he's wearing a tuxedo. Like, what is that all about?
This evil businessman.
Yeah.
When he captures Lois, there's this really, because the robot returns, the jewels are emptied into the sea, but he brought back the girl. But they do this really cool scene where it goes to the lair and it shows, I think it's a chair or something like that. And then the camera goes and pans, follows this trail of clothes on the ground. And it really has this like sexy aspect to it. It's almost like you expect to like the camera to pan and see them in bed or something like that. It's really alluring.
I don't remember this at all. Did we watch the same
these
short?
These gloves, it's like a glove, a shoe, and maybe a scarf or something like that. And it's trailed on the floor. And then the camera shows up, goes up, and it shows the doorway to the lair where like the vat of lava is. And it's really interesting because it invoked this imagery of like this scandalous scene in like a scene of an affair or something like that.
Oh.
And it was very in the camera, the way
you
the camera
expected
panned
them
across
to pan
it,
to a bed, and then they're all in the bed smoking cigarettes.
I certainly didn't expect that, but that's the impression that it gave, and it was really cool. I was like, oh, that's really interesting.
I don't remember this, to be honest. I remember the camera panning over and you seeing like a bunch of like workbenches and shit, like with tools. Like you get a sense like the guy has been creating the robots and stuff like that.
I don't remember that.
I think we might have seen a different short, you and I.
Well, I saw the better ones.
I think Chad loaded the X-rated version for you and I got the kiddie version.
Mm.
Chad, I might have to look into your circuitry. You might be malfunctioning. There might be interference with Chad. I'll have to look into that. Oh, it's one other thing to point out in this episode, and this starts another trend. I don't know if it started here or not, but the idea of like a spinning newspaper to reveal exposition. Mm. We see that in this episode first, and that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, the newspaper telling you something becomes a common theme in the show.
And speaking of common themes, as before in the first episode and again here, the episode ends with Superman in one arm having Lois and the other having the villain, and like falling down to Earth and then coming spinning towards, you know, the audience. And then it ends with like the bad guy in jail or something. Like it's an ongoing theme or ending that we see in a lot of these Superman shorts, with Superman flying back down to the Earth or to the ground, whatever, with Lois and bad guy in tow. End episode. No due process, and then it ends with Superman winking at the audience. It's like
no, it ends with Clark Kent winking at the audience.
Clark Kent winking at the audience.
Yeah, because for a lot of episodes, Lois Lane says like, "Oh, if it wasn't for Superman," or Clark says, "Oh, you got this great story," and then Lois is like, "Oh, if it wasn't for Superman," and then Clark will wink at the camera.
Too bad Superman wasn't there. Too bad.
Really pioneering the whole breaking the fourth wall.
Oh yeah, that's right. They do break the fourth wall. He winks at the audience like I was there the whole time. Yeah. I didn't think about that. That's interesting. Anyway, well, that's. Did you have any other thoughts on Mechanical Monsters?
That covers it.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for the second part of our 17-part Max Fleischer Superman CryptoCast series here in Apocalypse Video. Hope you enjoyed it. Needless to say, I think we'd both recommend this short as well.
Certainly.
I think it's great. In some ways, I almost like it more than the first one, at least as far as like the villain is concerned. I like the robots more.
Well, I think this one actually has a more a clear narrative.
Yeah. Involved. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And so I think
the guy wants to get rich.
Yeah. I think in that respect, the episode is a little bit more whole. But this is certainly I think for me the first one is the absolute best, and then this one is barely even a step down. So I mean, it's still in the same realm of quality.
I agree. I think it's at the same level and in some ways better. I feel. But anyway. Well, yeah, we'd recommend it, and that's going to do it for the second installment of our Apocalypse Video CryptoCast. I'm your host, Dave, signing off from Sector 2.
Goodbye.
That was Morton Hoof, your ruler of Sector 9, if I'm not mistaken, and other various areas of the Wasteland. But we'll be back with Superman in Chapter 3 of the CryptoCast.
$1 billion Limited.